You're listening to Manufacturing Ignition Hot Topics, bringing you right up to date on the latest trends and discussions within UK manufacturing. Sponsored by Bonfire Recruitment, helping manufacturing leaders across the UK to attract the best talent for their manufacturing company. Ignite your business or career today by visiting www.bonfirerecruitment.com. Here's your hosts, Terry Mallin and Scott Buchanan.
Moving on to the manufacturing hot topic this week. For those listening for the first time, every week we discuss a specific hot topic on the industry. In the previous weeks, we've discussed autonomous cars, Industry 4.0, the update, and last week we did the food to go sector, how it's a multi-million pound business. It's only going to be growing. This week, Scott, what's the topic we're going to be covering?
Thought it was relevant. There's a lot of challenges at the moment within manufacturing, and I think it's very easy just to assume that all businesses have actually considered it. And so I think we'll look at actually the challenges within manufacturing. I think that.
So the current challenges today in manufacturing as we are sitting here in November 2017.
And with, a short-term view, not necessarily, a long-term view, but certainly a short-term view to the next, 6 months, a year of actually what's potentially happening. Because at the moment, as you're fully aware, and most people within manufacturing, manufacturing outperforms every other sector in exporting. 45% of the UK export is actually 45% of the UK exports, and almost 60% of that goes to the EU. That way, so there's a bigger question in there about actually we're making all this stuff, and the majority of it's going to the EU, and now we're realising actually what is our relationship with the EU?
I think, even if we hit the first nail in the head, Scott, with regards to BritEx, because that's the big one that's going up, that everybody's aware of, because the impact of BritEx in manufacturing, can be very disruptive, obviously, to current business models and plans, and that could be from exactly as you just mentioned there, a supply chain side of it, So that might be importing or exporting. There's a massive impact in that. Secondly, as I'm very well aware, the labour skills and a lot of people that I've been discussing with over the last sort of 3 to 4 months who are European citizens working in the UK, they certainly have the concern and they're reviewing whether they stay in the UK subject to what happens BritEx.
Yeah.
And move back.
Exactly.
I mean, give you an example, down the southeast of England, a lot of European labour is used within the fruit and veg or fresh produce industry. And with that, at the end of the day, that's a very challenging environment to recruit people at the best of times. If a European workforce had to leave, then it's going to have a major impact. That'll be major impact on that sort of fresh produce, which is only going to impact the shelves and supermarkets, etc. And it's very much to be aware of. And I know when you were mentioning a couple of quotes there, Scott, so I know so manufacturing, looking at it online at the minute, the CBI report, 45% of the UK manufacturing, 45% of exports comes from manufacturing, and over half of that is then supplied into the EU. So that supply chain's really important.
It's scary. And just tying in with your comment there around the southeast, I guess, is what you're saying, where there's a massive food producing now. There's going to be a bit of engineering and a bit more heavier stuff there. But see that actual manufacturing output to the UK economy on an annual basis, it's as much as it's 48% of the UK total. It's 19 billion.
Wow. That's phenomenal. That is phenomenal.
So, those companies will all been fighting, but they'll been trying to attract the best talent for their organisations, in that part of the world. And all of a sudden, these people will be wondering, well, actually, we might want to review whether, we stay here. Now, I don't know what your honest thoughts are, Ted. My personal view is I think there'll actually be an element of flux, I guess, But I do believe that that there's probably no reason for the majority of these people to actually to really, you know, to up and leave just now, because I think
I hope so.
The impact of the UK economy is too it's massive. They're not going to let it happen.
I hope so. You know, I mean, that would be the worst case scenario, that people do leave, and I hope that's not the case. But you know, it's prudent for manufacturing leaders to be seriously thinking about this and actually having some sort of contingency plan in place as well. You know, even as I was touching on, Scott, you know, the food manufacturing, it's not just about the sort of labour side of it. We look at exports. There's a possible implication of tariffs between an EU single market in the UK, which could massively increase costs for manufacturers. So talking about food manufacturers specifically, they could face an average EU tariff of 22.3% against the current 2.3% for non-food products. Okay, so it's not just all about factoring in the labour side of it. It's actually, there's going to be possible implications. Now, there'll be positive implications and there'll be negative implications, and it's actually weighing that up.
But the bottom line is, though, that there's a potential additional cost in there, and these companies, especially in the food sector, the margins are quite tight. And actually, if you're making, I don't know, you'll know better than I do, Terry, if you're making 100,000 cakes, do you know that way, you know, you put the cost of sugar up by 2 pence or 5 pence because of a tax, you know, versus the volume that's actually getting used. It's you know, and it won't be just one part of the ingredient. I'm sure it'll be plenty of others, and it'll all soon add up. And if the cost of labour is having to increase as well, you know, there's a whole other argument there. Therein lies another question, Terry, as well. The reason that the UK is heavily relying on labour from further afield is because the UK nationals haven't really wanted to graft away and doing, I guess, less challenging roles. Do you know that way? So do you think the UK labour market is maybe more evolved now? Do you think that there is potential that there's potentially schemes that would allow individuals to go and take some of these jobs back? I don't mean that we're taking jobs off anyone that's in a present role, but if people leave their jobs and there's vacancies, would there be a pool of individuals in the UK to fall into that? Or is it a case of whereby this, you know, industry 4.0 is actually very relevant by actually a bit of forward thinking and a bit of investment is the way to do it?
I think that's two very valid points, Scott. I think the first point is a different topic in its own, but you know, as we've previously, industry 4.0 definitely highlights actually where this could be hugely beneficial for minimising risk and disruption for business leaders within manufacturing, 100%. And then, so that's exports, you know, and if we're looking at a lot of innovation and R&D is supported by Europe, you know, and I know a lot of EU funding is supplied to R&D, and manufacturing has, you know, manufacturing R&D accounted for 67% of the total UK R&D expenditure, and that was 2014, so I'm slightly out of date. But it gives you an idea of how hugely and highly exposed the manufacturing R&D is. And any changes to any funding schemes is going to have a major impact. So that has to be considered. That's got to be, you know, it's one of the issues that might affect manufacturing.
Do you remember when, you know, there was companies that, you know, it used to be, especially within manufacturing, you had an R&D stroke design focus team that then would work closely with the manufacturing, you know, on-site team or on-site within the UK team to develop the product, and it all kind of works succinctly together. What happened about, what, maybe 8 years ago, certainly in my career, was that plenty of organisations were tempted over to China and other parts of the world to do the manufacturing piece, and some actually fully shut down and ran away, and others actually kept some form of presence. And what has actually happened, which is relevant to this, is that a lot of manufacturing still does happen in China, but the quality standards and actually the unidentified costs that were involved, it was actually more prudent to keep things in the UK, and they've actually got formal design teams, you know, in the UK of these companies. But these companies, they need, there's an element, well, there's an incentive as well for these companies to actually do that. And there's a government incentive, and there's actually companies, I'm aware of people that actually work in the sector that they work with manufacturing companies, and happy to help anyone that's found themselves not got this tax rebate. But there's actually companies, on the basis that there's been R&D work done, that they can actually, you know, they can literally go through the process to claim that back. And it's exactly the volume of numbers you're talking about, Terry. So I wonder if, you know, again, tying in with this EU piece, will the UK government, you know, do a similar scheme? And what will that actually mean to manufacturing? Because at the end of the day, if you're not leading the way from a design perspective, then it's cheaper to make stuff elsewhere, probably, to the what quality standards. That's, there's a big question mark on that. But the world's changing. So what do you think, Terry?
Yeah, no, I completely agree with you, Scott. I think it's a valid point, because what we're looking at is the effect of funding was taken away or whatever, but what we really need to be thinking about is the positive side of what the UK government would do in return, and make sure that if that's not equal value, if it's not more, because we should be embracing any R&D and actually really establishing the UK as a leader, not only within manufacturing products, but actually innovation and developing new products and exporting that to a global market. And that will position UK manufacturing once again at the forefront of the global scale. And then going on to the last point on our on this is obviously, you know, the addressing the skills crisis. Scott, you probably know more about that.
As in that we need more skills. I think one of the challenges that all businesses have is attracting talent. And I believe that within, as it's known in the world now, it's STEM skills, you know, such as science, technology, engineering, and mathematics. Apparently, you know, half of the businesses in the manufacturing sector, that's 50, in fact, over half the businesses, 55% are not confident of finding people with higher level skills in these areas, which is, I mean, that's
okay.
I mean, you know, literally, you know, people with science, technology, engineering, or mathematics skills, there's a, you know, 55% of manufacturing companies in the UK are worried that they'll actually not be able to attract that. I don't know what you've seen from any of the programs that you've done, or any of the, I mean, that from, you know, graduate programs and, you know, developing companies, but that's quite a start.
Yeah, I think things are getting done with that in the background, maybe not in the scale that would be essential, but there's definitely stuff going on. I've been invited to a couple of STEM events where basically what you would do is go into schools and, you know, for me specifically, it'd be sitting in a high school, a fair or whatever it is, but actually giving careers advice, and it's genuine, these people are interested in STEM careers. And I've actually got, I think, 3 or 4 penciled in the diary for the next 2 months. So, I mean, that's small stuff, but actually in the big, wider scale, if more people's getting involved in that, there's more people exposed to the opportunities within manufacturing and engineering. And that should help going forward. I think, when I was at school, the big thing was you become a lawyer, you become a doctor, and then when the realisation is that you maybe don't really want to do that, then you actually try and work out what's probably the best career for you. And you're probably doing starting to do your A-levels or hires, whatever that might be. And then you pick a topic that sounds of interest for university, yeah. And then it's kind of driven about, you know, socially, you know, what you see socially acceptable. And you kind of, you know, so I think if that there's more of a push in the basis of giving, and specifically people at school, more information, as much information as possible, as much exposure to what manufacturing does. And that might be something we can do in future, Scott. We might actually, you know, with the manufacturing companies we do, you know, we could do a video about them all. I remember watching BBC and they were doing the Inside the Factory. I mean, we could probably do something really good in future about that.
Recruitment out to the masses at an early stage, so we can get the apprentices, the recruitment apprentices coming through as well.
I don't know about that. But at the end of the day, so it's a... You know, it's good ideas. So, Scott, I'm just cautious of time, but I think that was really useful, that hot topic. It was quite interesting, actually. So, you know, the key things is BritX, exports, innovation, and then finally a skills crisis. So that was 4 good points I think we made there.
Very much so. And I think it's important factors that are going to kick in and will probably evolve. So we'll probably revisit that maybe second quarter of next year, I guess, to see how things are evolving, because the landscape is doing that.
Thanks for listening to the Manufacturing Ignition podcast. If you've made it this far, we take it that you enjoyed the show. In return, we'd love it if you'd leave us a rating and review on iTunes. Subscribe while you're there, and we'll catch you for the next episode.